Welcome to the Christian Life Coach Collective. I am your host, Laura Malone, and we're here to talk about life coaching, entrepreneurship, leading yourself well, and lots of spirit-led life and business strategies. So thanks for joining me on this journey, and let's jump into today's episode. Okay, friends, I have a great treat for you today. My new friend, Justin Janowski, helps coaches build their dream businesses in alignment with faith in Jesus and a belief in sales from a clean selling standpoint is what I call it. So he founded Faith to Influence to help people learn how to turn their calling as a coach into profitable businesses and step into this space of sales so that they can get clients, so that they can be profitable, successful, make an impact, and pay themselves. You know, we want to walk in our calling, but we need to pay the bills. So he works with coaches who want to learn the rewarding process of becoming great at building their business with pricing and sales strategies because he really believes in scaling income and maximizing impact. So I listen to his podcast and I can totally hear his heart for helping entrepreneurs simplify and grow their businesses alongside God. So you're going to find huge value in this episode that's going to help you understand the money tapes that are replaying in your head, how anybody can develop skills around sales and marketing, the fact that sales can feel good and be clarifying for everybody involved, and the truth that your calling is needed in the marketplace, not just in ministry, and how finding the sweet spot between being overly aggressive and too passive can really benefit you. So if you're looking to start your online coaching business in a simple, streamlined way and make sure that you have all the necessary processes of an online coaching business in place, then join me in the Call to Coach course. I actually help you start your business. Do all of the things. Get them all set in place. It's going to help you create the business system that you need so you're on your way to successful business and creating major kingdom impact. And then go use the tips and truths that Justin shares to help grow your sales strategies, because selling your coaching offers is a major part of running and scaling your business. You need all the parts and pieces as a coachpreneur, not just coaching skills. And you're made for this. So God's going to equip you for what he's called you to. And Justin and I are here to support you in your calling. So because our conversation was great, I actually had to split it into two episodes. So look forward to the next episode to be released in a couple of days. You're not going to want to miss it. And without much further ado, here's my friend, Justin. Okay. Hi, Justin. I'm so glad to have you on the Christian Life Coach Collective. Thanks for coming on and sharing your calling and your journey with everybody. I would love for you just to introduce yourself.
Yeah.
Tell us about you and your life.
Yeah. Thank you so much for having me. I'm married. I've got two kids. I live in Wisconsin. We've got toddlers here in Milwaukee. And so it's for the entrepreneurs who have toddlers, you know that life can be kind of busy and hectic and crazy. We've got a 3 and a 5 year old, and they're sweet and fun. And there's a lot of responsibility around here in my business.
That's like a whole podcast in itself.
Oh my gosh.
Entrepreneurs with toddlers. That's like
yes.
A very solid niche right there.
Yes. It's a wild life experience. It's an adventure, no doubt.
Especially if you're trapped inside in the winter with
yes.
those toddlers while you're trying to work.
Exactly. We've had some 0-degree weather here recently. And yeah, you can get a little bit stir crazy. In my business, at Faith to Influence, I help Christian coaches optimize their business models and their pricing, their sales strategies so they can scale their income and their impact. That's really fun for me. I love sports. I love games. I like strategy. So that's a little bit about me.
Okay, do you play Tetris?
You know, I did play a lot of Tetris growing up. I've got a Pac-Man machine in the basement over here just outside
my house. I'm coming over.
Yeah, that's really fun. I love chess and I love Settlers of Catan and Ticket to Ride. And our favorite game, my wife and I and my older brother love a game that's really complex strategy. It's called Terraforming Mars. But if anyone's listening and they like complex strategy games, they're willing to spend the time to learn it and play it. Terraforming Mars, it's a great like 2-to-4 player game. And we love that too.
I have never heard of that. I've heard of all the rest of them, but that one, I'm probably going to have to go and find a specific group of friends to play that with. Yes. I would totally play that with you, but I don't think I know anybody who would play it with me right now.
Right. You can't just play that with anybody. Like, we rarely teach that to other people. We've got a very small circle that we include in Terraforming Mars. Settlers of Catan, great game that you can teach to anybody, play with anybody, super fun and easy. But for people who like that and want something more complex, Settlers of Catan goes to Terraforming Mars.
Okay. That sounds like an extravagant version of my brain on a board or something. So I play Pets the Pigs. You ever played that?
Oh, we love that. Yeah, we've actually got the pig version now too that you can like roll like
the foam guys.
That's the foam. Yeah, you can roll them in a yard. We do.
You can hit people in the head with them.
Oh yeah, yeah. Kids like to throw those. They turns into dodgeball instead of board games. It's good. Those are fun.
That's awesome. And I will link to all these resources in the show notes. These are important things. Okay, so tell me a little bit about how you got started as a journey, how you landed where you're at today.
Yeah, when I was 18 years old, I started selling Cutco kitchen knives. Have you heard of that?
I have.
Yeah, very expensive, very nice knife sets. In-home presentations they're sold at primarily. So I was calling my friends' parents and my neighbors and my family and asking, could I come over and sit at the kitchen table with you and do a presentation, show you this kitchen stuff, these knives? And I know it's a weird job. It's a goofy job. It's not for everyone. I loved it. I sold a couple $100,000 worth of knives. I had 700 customers. I learned about sales and entrepreneurship, and it really changed my life. I saw an ad in the newspaper. That's how I found out about that job. And I didn't realize it was selling knives. It was called Vector Marketing. And I thought it was like, oh, cool, like a professional marketing job. I can do that. And it was selling Cutco. And that experience led me into sales and entrepreneurship. While I was growing as an entrepreneur at Cutco, I hired Hal Elrod, who's the author of The Miracle Morning, which is a sensation, like huge, huge book. He was teaching me The Miracle Morning, his morning routine before he wrote the book, and coaching with him was really valuable to me. And then later when I was a financial planner, I hired Ben Skemper to be my coach, and he was running more of a group mastermind kind of program, live retreats and events and excursions across the world. And I joined that program and had so much fun in it. I thought, man, I want to do this. Like, this is changing my life. It's fun. It's compelling. It's more meaningful than the work that I felt like I was doing previously. And I decided I wanted to be a coach. And when I did, Ben said, we need a salesperson. They were a startup company, three people in it. And so they hired me to come on and learn from them while doing sales for them. And I did that for 4 years. And then I felt like the company was growing in a direction where it was like spiritual, but not Christian. It didn't totally align with my values. And so I wanted to create my own version of that kind of coaching company, but I wanted to bring God into it and bring my faith. And so I made a tough decision to leave there and start Faith to Influence. And it was interesting timing because my wife and I just had our first baby, Grace. So this is 5 years ago now. She's five now. And Kara, my wife, had left her job to be at home with Grace for the first year because my job, this little startup company, was now providing enough that it could take care of the family. And it was my second day back after paternity leave that I felt like God was tugging on me and calling me to quit my job and start this business. And I remember calling and telling Kara, and it was kind of out of the blue. It felt like a message from God. And she just cried and was scared and like, what are you talking about? And we took a month and we prayed and we talked about it and we figured it out. And we both ultimately felt like it was the right decision. But those first few months were really scary before all of a sudden it kind of took off. And my goal my first year was to just do $60,000 in revenue. And God had bigger plans. We collected over 250 grand. And I realized, okay, this is what I'm meant to do.
That's so awesome. Yeah. Backing up a second, when you were selling knives, did you ever cut yourself in a presentation?
Ooh, you know, I'm sure I got like little cuts, like a paper cut version of a cut, but not much. I didn't really cut myself in presentations. I did win a K-bar knife from Cutco, which is like a marine, like military kind of knife that Cutco also manufactures, K-bar. And you would win, like if you won a sales competition, you could get a K-bar. And I won that. And oh, this sounds so dumb now to say out loud. It sounds so silly. But I was in my early 20s and I was in the office and I was like, I would like, oh man, I can't even believe this. It's a long time since I said this out loud. And now it sounds so crazy, but I would flip the K-bar knife up in the air and catch it on its handle. And I was so confident man, this sounds so nuts. It's such a sharp, dangerous knife.
Don't let your children listen to this story.
Yeah, that's earmuffs. Anybody who is under 25 to listen to this.
Or and uninsured.
Right, right. But I would flip it in the air and catch it on its handle. And I would like show people. I'd do it in the office in front of people. I thought I was really impressive and cool until I wasn't, because it hit my finger and sliced a little bit of a cut here in my middle finger. And I didn't need surgery or anything crazy, but it bled a lot. And I do have a little scar, and I've definitely got a little bit of nerve damage because it went down deep, and I can feel like it just feels different there than it does the rest of my finger.
Right. You're lacking a little bit of nerve.
Yeah. Yeah. I had
so
plenty of nerve.
So you're trying to be Crocodile Dundee
yeah.
or something.
Man, this how silly. Nice. I'm so glad you asked that question so I can remember like how I guess I must have been pretty cocky and lacking reality. When you're young, you feel like you can do anything and you're untouchable. And I guess I was that way.
So I was asking that question because I'm thinking, okay, here you are and you're showing up to sales. Your first, like one of your first jobs is to sell something. And you have to like, you have to show, here's the kind of results you're going to get. This is what your tomato is going to look like after you slice it.
Right.
It's not going to be all jagged and messed up. You're going to have a beautiful sandwich, right?
Exactly.
So you have to like project what kind of results you're going to get and why you would want this knife versus, you know, the ones you bought at Sam's Club and whatever. So on and so forth. And you have to have a measure of confidence and belief in what you're selling.
Yeah.
And at 18, you were not like the dad who makes dinner for the family at the end of the day. You were, you know, you're just starting out even in the kitchen in your life.
Oh, yeah.
But you had this measure of confidence. And then you probably had to grow through that confidence and begin to even believe more about yourself, like how you can market, how you can sell something, and how you have to believe in your products, but you also have to believe in you.
Yeah.
And you have to believe in your customer's ability to learn how to use the product. Mm-hmm. So do you think that there's like certain personalities that just are more inclined towards sales and some that are just not so much? They have other giftings, strengths.
Yes. I do think that there are personality types that are more inclined towards sales and personality types that are less inclined. I do believe that anyone can do sales well if they want to. So all personality types, I know coaches and entrepreneurs who maybe they didn't choose to be in sales. They wanted to start a business, but then they realized, oh, I have to do sales. One of my clients, Vaughn Sanders, is more of an introverted personality type. And he actually like coaches introverted leaders specifically because it's a different personality type. And so, yeah, I think people who are extroverted, who are what we call people, they like to talk, they like to communicate, they like to share. They're maybe a little bit more confident and outgoing outwardly. Versus like the person who's maybe more internal in their processing, maybe more artistic or introverted. I think that the external is probably more inclined towards sales because they like the social aspect of it and they have less fear around like social engagement. But I think anyone who really wants to, like if you wanted to start a business, if you've got a calling inside of you that's really important to you, anyone can learn to do sales well. And I think that sales is going to look different in different people's hands. It can feel different in a different personality type. We should all sell in a way that honors our strengths and our personalities and the way that God made us. And that should feel different person to person. And I also know that sales doesn't have to be what we think it is from movies or experiences that we've had at car dealerships or whatever else we've seen. Sales with each individual can feel like something unique and special. And I believe when done right, it can feel fun. It can feel light. It can feel easy. It can feel conversational. And so I think everyone can do it, but there are certainly personality types that are inclined or called to it more easily, and others who are like, no, that's not me. I'm not interested in that. Even that person, though, if they had something they really wanted to sell and they learned a high integrity process, they could do it well.
I agree. And I would say, like, most of my listeners and clients, especially, they say, I want to be a coach. Like, I'm called to be a coach.
Yeah.
And when that is the foundation, that's not necessarily the same person who says, I'm called to be a salesperson.
Right.
Or even I'm called to start a business or be an entrepreneur. There are certain things that you have to recognize this is part of the process. If you want to be a coach that doesn't work for someone else, where they run the business and hire you as a coach for them, then you have to run your own business, which means you have to learn new skills. Yeah. And you can grow into that and build on your calling as a coach by being able to show, you know, you, that's how you're going to release your calling. It's going to how you're going to serve the world, right? So I think a lot of people come and say, like, I just want to be a coach. And then they don't recognize how many layers they have to actually add to that for people to find out that they are a coach and actually pay them so they can make a living doing it. So do you have a way that you teach those types of personalities, maybe more of a withdrawn personality rather than more assertive and social and confident in what they want to sell, maybe a little more withdrawn about sales and marketing? Do you have any little tools or keys that you use to encourage them to kind of rise up and speak up?
Yeah. Well, one thing I'll note is if these are people who are desiring to be a coach, but maybe the sales aspect of it feels scary, what I would teach to that person is sales and coaching, when done right, feel like almost the exact same thing. They're both trying to ask questions and help people find clarity and help people figure out like where they're at, where they want to go, what problem they need to solve to get there. And then we're helping them find the leverage to commit to solving the problem and taking a new set of actions that we believe are going to help them solve the problem or move towards their dream or their goal or whatever they're trying to accomplish. So they're exactly the same thing. Like if we teach a 10-step sales process, and the first 9 steps can absolutely be a perfect coaching process. The only thing that changes is step 10, where if you're already working with a client and you're coaching them, you might provide next steps that include, you know, course of action of what they're going to take action on between now and their next coaching call, versus in a sales call, that next step may be hiring you and your services if it feels like it's a fit, or maybe it's referring them somewhere else. And so step 10, where we make our offer, is the only thing that's really different in how I would advise people to coach. And so I think for the person who wants to be a coach but is scared about sales, if they recognize that they don't have to have like fancy things to say, they don't need to sell features and benefits, they don't need to share their resume on a sales call, they simply need to coach people and invite the right ones at the end to an invitation that can help them, that might take some of the pressure off. A great sales call is asking great questions more than it's having great answers.
I'll agree with you. It's a really powerful thing when you feel like you're inviting somebody to something rather than you are trying to manipulate them or push them around to get what you want. Mm-hmm. And so I'm always like, if you're on a discovery call, you're in that conversion state with a prospective client, your main goal is to focus on them and what they need.
Yeah.
Don't get your mind off of what you need. That's what you're supposed to be doing in your back office time and all of the rest of the time when you're building content and marketing. You should not be doing that and thinking about you while you're working with a client or a prospective client. Mm-hmm. And so it's about serving them, valuing what they need. And if you're not the right person, it's not the right time, it's not the right offer, you don't make them feel like they have to do it.
Right.
And so that thing, which is I like about you and your podcast, you talk about let's have integrity when it comes to money. And so I think that there's two sides of that. There's the integrity side of, don't be sleazy, manipulative, pushy, don't make it about you. But there's also the integrity of showing up and actually selling what you offer, because that's how you serve the world. And having an integrity in the calling, like stewarding your calling well, which means you have to show up in sales.
Yeah. For sure.
There's just there's both sides of it. Don't be sleazy, but also don't be unfaithful to what you're called to.
Right. And so I think there's kind of like, if you looked at it like a scale, on one side of the scale is like the uber aggressive salesperson. And nobody wants to be that. I suppose some people want to be that. Most of
that's
you,
so right.
There's like, high integrity, service-based, loving coaches, they do not want to be aggressive. In fact, they so badly do not want to be seen as aggressive or pushy or sleazy or any of that stuff that sometimes people go way too far to the other side of the spectrum, which is passive. And instead of being aggressive, they're completely passive. They're so passive and so sales avoidant, in fact, that even when they get on a sales call, they try to make it not feel like a sales call. And so they almost hide that it's a sales call. And a mistake that a coach can make who's afraid of being a pushy, aggressive salesperson is they can avoid sales while they're doing sales. And so they might not mention that it's a sales call. They might not talk about their outcome in the beginning. They're just going to ask questions and connect. And it's going to feel like they're building a friendship and not doing a sales call. And then at the end, if they try to squeeze in an offer, it's all of a sudden going to be like, wait, that was weird. Like, where'd that come from? And if they're weird about it because they're feeling uncomfortable or nervous or whatever, it's going to feel weird to the other person. So if somebody's too passive, they're either not getting on sales calls at all, in which case, yeah, they're dishonoring the gift that God's given them. Because if we don't make a sale, we can't help people. We can't bring this calling to life. We can't bring this dream to life. We can't serve our families and our teams and our communities as much as we could otherwise. We can't tithe as much to our church. Like, we're really leaving a lot on the table if we just avoid sales calls altogether. Or there's this kind of in between where it's like, I'm going to light up a sales call, but I'm going to pretend it's something else. And I'm not going to really talk about what it is. And the truth is, we don't want to be passive or aggressive. We don't want to be sales avoidant or like commission hungry. What we want to be is in the middle, which is assertive. We want to be assertive leaders who are looking for the win-win on both sides and are lovingly asking great questions and making it easy for the right people to say yes, not trying to force anyone to say yes, not trying to make the wrong people say yes, simply making it as easy as possible for the right people to say yes. And if we're doing that assertively, we should also do it with transparency, which makes sales feel so much better. And we do this at the beginning of our sales calls with a pre-frame where we tell people what the outcome of the call is within the first few minutes of the call. And we tell them the structure of the call that's going to help us get there. And then we'll make a decision at the end of the call whether or not to work together. And then we get consent to sell. We say, does that sound good? Are you okay with that process? And when we receive yes, now we can move forward with transparency. There's just like an ease to it when we do it the right way, assertively instead of aggressively or passively.
Right. And I think what you said, the point is to be the leader.
Yeah.
You're not a beggar on the call.
Right.
And you're not the boss. You're simply helping somebody. You're leading them to make the best decision for them.
Yeah.
Not the best decision for you. Although you do keep this in mind when it is the best. Because sometimes you're going to say, we're not the right fit for one another. I'm not the best coach for you. And sometimes you know that's not the best client for you. Mm-hmm. But that ability to rise up as a leader, especially as a Christian, and say, I really want to help serve you in the best way, whether that's referring you to someone else or that's me explaining to you how I really can and want to help you. But that leadership of here's the framework of what is possible, and then here is what I can offer you to help you make the best, most committed decision for you. And I love that you teach that. I love that framework. And speaking of all of that, what would you say in regards to money stories about even stepping into that zone, even getting on those calls for most coaches in the beginning? What would you say the most common narratives are that coaches struggle with, like beliefs that they have around selling and marketing what they offer?
Yeah. Well, there's a lot of stories that people have running around their heads that create a tremendous amount of resistance to success. And there are stories that we have about sales. There are stories that we have about our prospects or about ourselves or about our offer or about money that you referenced that like really get in the way of the success that we could otherwise have. And the first thing we want to do is gain awareness of the disempowering stories that we're telling ourselves that are running around, as John Acuff would say, as soundtracks in our head and just kind of repeating themselves. When it comes to sales, people have a story that like sales is pushy or sales is greedy or sales is this or that or whatever. It's sleazy. It's uncomfortable. And whatever their story is, like they thought sales was that because of movies and experiences and based in like some evidence of truth, but it doesn't have to be their truth. And so the shift there, once we gain the awareness of the story, like I believe sales is pushy or manipulative or whatever it is to write down the story, the old one, and then cross it off, draw a line through it right next to it in all capital letters, not true. And then right underneath a true, more empowering story, which around the sales stories is sales with me is. And we can decide that sales with me, whatever it's been in other people's hands, with me, it's loving. With me, it's generous. With me, it's honest. With me, it's transparent. Sales with me is good. Sales with me feels good. Sales with me is fun. Sales with me helps people get what they want or become more of who they want to become. These are the kinds of stories I'm telling myself about sales. And if that's not natural for you, writing those new empowering stories and repeating them and reading them and seeing them regularly will help. Well, the same thing's true with stories about money or about our own value, which I know a lot of coaches need to get over and work through as well. And that's fine. It's all part of the process. It's normal to have those struggles and those challenges. But some people believe around money, like that money is the root of all evil. That money is bad. It's greedy. People who earn money are unfair or unjust or bad in one way or another. Like they're the bad guys. Or that because we're Christians, if you're a faith-filled person, like we shouldn't have money or we shouldn't value money. But the Bible doesn't say that money is the root of all evil. The Bible says the love of money is the root of all evil. And so, you know, Jesus calls us to love God and love our neighbors. And if we decide to make money the root of all evil, like if we make money an idol and we love it more than our neighbors, we love it more than our prospects and the people around us, yeah, it's bad. It's really bad. But when we have a good, generous heart around money, it can be a wonderful tool for good. My story around money is that the more I earn, the more I can give. And my wife and I have always given 10 to 20%. And so every dollar more we earn, we're giving more as well. And so if we have that kind of standpoint, like I know my prayer all the time is, God, help me make more sales, especially if it's a fit. Help me make it easy for these people to say yes. Help me to grow my business and grow my income. And God, as you bless my business, help me be more of a blessing to my family, to my team, to my community, to my neighbors, to my church. Help me to give generously and bless others as you bless me. And like, because of that story, I know I'm going to give generously. I know I'm going to do good things with the money that God blesses me with. I've just removed any resistance to earning money. And I don't think it's bad. And I also know from a coaching and pricing standpoint that when I charge more, the clients who pay more for my services, they get more out of it. They put more into it. They've got more at stake. And it, you know, it makes a big difference for them too. So it can be a win-win in that way.
And you can love money and not have any money. It's not just people with money who love money.
You're right. You're exactly
it's
right.
The human who loves money and idolizes money and puts money before God and others. Yeah. And so whether you have money in the bank or not, that is always an option. Yeah. You could choose to go that way. And so having money, like you said, the Bible doesn't say that having money is the root of evil. It's the love of money. Yeah. And that is regardless of how much money you have. And the less money you have, oftentimes I see clients are more focused on money than if they had it, because they have a lack of it, which can actually cause it to become more of an idol, because you're so focused on your lack of it and your desire for it because of all the things you can't do without it. Mm. And you can't give more. And then when God wants you to be a cheerful giver, you want to hold on to it because you have so little of it. Mm. And so it's that love of money really manifests in anybody's life if that's just the way that we're going, regardless of how much is in the bank, right?
Yeah.
So when you understand that, then you can kind of move out that resistance in your story to having money, to spending money in the way that you should spend money, like however you steward it to grow your business, so you can serve more people. So like you said, you can have greater impact, you can give more. And that brings me to the thought that a lot of my coaches in the Christian area have a resistance to doing what they're called to do and getting paid for it, mm-hmm. because they feel like this is my calling, it's my ministry, and I should get paid for. And, you know, oftentimes I say, like, well, does your pastor get paid? Do all of the people who are doing what they're called to do or working at the church, do they get paid? Do they get to pay their bills because they spend more time doing this thing they're called to? And what is different about you and your calling in that aspect? Do you hit that like that? Also, I think that it's the other side is they feel that people expect them to give it for free. Mm-mm. Because, well, you're a Christian. You should just be doing that for free for me. You ever come up and stand?
Yeah, thanks for asking. And I just want to say your response to the money question, that was a masterclass of wisdom. And if somebody's really struggling with money, I think they should pause right now, rewind, listen to what you just said about it. I've not heard people put it in those words. And your perspective there meant a lot to me and was really valuable perspective. Thank you.
That's just coaching for free. You know.
Yes, thank you. I'll receive it. Free Laura Malone coaching. This is what I'm here for. Now, regarding like the feeling that like, oh, should I give this for free? This is my calling. Like maybe I shouldn't be charging for my ministry. I like the points that you made about people you know, who are earning in their ministry, and even people who are on missions, like, you know, they need money to pay for the mission. And so they're receiving a compensation to pay for their needs. It's just a different form of compensation through donations. But there's no question that, like, we need money to survive in today's world from some source, right? Like, you know, we don't, for our physical survival, like, and what I also know is that we need Christians at all, like, levels of financial class. If we want to be able to grow the kingdom, like, we need Christians in all different professions and all different kinds of places. And where some people's, like, battlefield for Jesus is on, like, the mission field, for other people, it's in the marketplace. And for other people, it's on Wall Street. And for other people, it's in the doctor's office. And for some, it's in the schools where they're teaching our kids. And so we need people in every single line of work, in every single place in the world, in every single social class and economic class and all these different things. We need Christians everywhere. And so I do want to make that point. And there's a certain, like, level of influence that people can have in certain economic and financial classes with those groups of people that maybe wouldn't be received as well. If every Christian on the planet was really poor, we'd probably have a lot less influence for the kingdom. That's something that's relevant to consider. But also, no one does expect us, excuse me, very few people would expect you to work for free. Very few people. You'll have a sprinkle of people here and there, but it's rare. I talk to thousands of people a year, and rarely does anybody expect me to do my work for them for free. That's a really uncommon expectation. And so I think it's the coach who worries about that. It's a story, but it's not actually based in reality or truth. People do expect us to earn. That's normal. That's okay. And in fact, like, if we were doing our work for all of our clients for free, most of them wouldn't show up. Interesting story, like, we get hired to do sales for others all the time. And we got hired to do sales at a conference last month. And was it December? It might have been November. It was late November, early December. We went to a conference that was a free conference. And they sold like 450 tickets or something like that and had 30 people show up. 30 people show up. 420 people bought or registered for the free ticket to the conference and did not show, because when it's free, there's not leverage for them to take action. Like, we usually want to get our money's worth. The more we spend, the more likely we are to show. If 450 people had signed up for a $1,000 conference, probably 440 people would have been there. You know, some people would have missed anyways. They would have missed their $1,000 conference. Maybe that wasn't a high enough price tag for them. But we'll get more out of it when we spend money on things. But the final piece I'll say on this is, for some people, they do want to just volunteer their ministry. That's fine. There are ways to volunteer your love and your experience and your level of support. And there are communities and people who will receive that for free, and it will be a blessing to them. And if you're in a financial position where you can do that, and that's what you desire to do, and that's what God's calling you to, go ahead and do that. But if you want to run a for-profit business, there's no reason not to do that, that I can think of that's compelling from, like, a mission standpoint. God wants us not to bury our one coin, but to turn it into 10. Like, that story's in the Bible as well. And there's plenty of evidence that, you know, we should maximize our gifts. And for so many coaches, if they don't earn enough in their business, they're going to have to go get a job. And that means that they have to close their business and they can't help anybody with this passion that they have. And even for people who maybe have a spouse or significant other or another source of income that provides for the family, and their income isn't necessarily needed from their coaching business, there's not, like, a pressure on the income. If they do not earn for many people, they will burn out on giving those gifts. And so if we have an empty cup, it's hard to fill more from it. So we need to fill our cup as well. And sometimes that's financially, sometimes it's in other ways. Not everyone has to have a for-profit business, but I think there's nothing wrong with having a for-profit business. And if that's what you're called to and it's important to your family, that's what you should do without any concern about whether or not it's right, because it's right and honorable for us to do good work and be able to provide for our families and our communities and our churches.
So agree. So good. You know, I run a nonprofit, and so one thing that I like to make clear is that whether you run a nonprofit or for-profit, it's the difference is set up in the legalities and the taxes. But both require every business system to be set up.
Yeah.
And I think a lot of people have this mindset that if you are a ministry, you don't do the things that a business does. And it's just not true. You have to do everything that a for-profit business has to do. There are just a couple of different tweaks in there. You might not pay taxes when you go shop for this or that on different things. And also you have to raise support. So you have an additional job when you run a ministry and a nonprofit. You have an additional job of finding donors. So now instead of charging people for something for like a not like a for-profit business would, you have to go find people who will pay the bills while you serve all those people for free. At which point in our nonprofit, everything still has a price tag attached because there's value to it. And like you said, I want people to show up. And there's always a difference in my nonprofit, the ministry side, as well as my coaching side, that if there's something for free, you're right. I'm going to get 5% of people are going to show up. Yeah. And even if more than that shows up, it doesn't mean they're going to be all in and really invested. Because people love to just take little freebies here and there and duct tape them together. I get it. But there is an investment to be made. And you want to invite people to make an investment into themselves. You walk them, you lead them to recognizing they're worth the investment.
Yeah.
That it's worth it to do this work, to do whatever they're called to do. It's worth it to invest into that calling.
Okay, that's about it for today. We're going to save some more good stuff for episode number 238. So don't forget to listen into that because we're going to talk about when you should consider working with a sales coach and the money stories that you have been believing, what a sales call sounds like, what's the flow of that, and then also your decision to be confident in how you show up as a coach and in your business. So don't miss it.
Hey friends, don't forget to jump into the Christian Life Coach Collective Facebook group if you haven't already, so you can connect with like-directed people and get free resources and ask for feedback, all the things that are going to help support you on your calling as a coach. I hope to see you in there, and don't forget to subscribe to the show.